The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Good morning. It is Monday, October 7th. 51 degrees on our way up to about 90. A couple more days of warm, and I guess we actually return to some fall-like weather, and maybe even a shower or two coming a little bit later. Boy, I'll tell you, it's just, I don't know about you, but I'm surprised I've had to kept the water and the sprinklers on to keep watering the weeds on my property in order to keep things at least a little bit green. I ended up, I was talking with Paul over at Valley View Nursery, one of our sponsors, dropped by the station the other day, and I was talking about these laurels, these English laurels that we have on the side of our fence line, and how we lost a couple during the intense heat of last year, and they had never been plumbed in for water. Water had never been delivered to them on the sprinkler system. And so I was talking with Paul about that. Are they just old? And he said, no. He says, most people think that this is normally that you don't have to give them water, that they find their own water. And usually that's okay. But he says, you really do have to water them in the summertime. And so that's something I'm going to be doing over the next few days, getting it plumbed in for next year and getting the sprinkler set up. And in the meantime, though, I gave them a pretty darn good soaking over the weekend, the ones that were left at least. But yeah, things have been amazingly dry. And also prepping the swimming pool, the old swimming pool that I never wanted with the house, to be filled in. And I don't know what we'll do. We'll probably grow weeds on top of that, too, because that's just what I do best, is grow weeds. Don't ever hire me for the landscaping. All right. Anyway, join in 770-5633. Did you see Donald Trump's speech on Saturday, the return to Butler? That was a real pleasure. I watched it for a couple of hours, and I had to go get some other things done. Yeah, but I think it went on for three, maybe even a little bit more, but this was the rally after that. And boy, I got to tell you, just it was just great from start to finish. It really was. And what really made it great is that I didn't watch it on Fox News or any of the other talking head shows. I watched it on C-SPAN. I'm getting to the point where that's where you have to go if there's an event coming up. If you want to actually watch the event, you can't go to a Fox. You can't go to a CNN because you have your highly paid clowns that have to be there to give their hot take on absolutely everything rather than letting you actually watch the event. But yeah, that was something. And I actually enjoyed watching it on C-SPAN. We watched it for a couple of hours. Linda and I were there. And we both agreed it was just the perfect tone, the great honoring of the former fire chief Corey, who had been killed on his Trump's assassination attempt. That version of Ave Maria, man, I got to tell you, just chilling. I thought it was Pavarotti at first. I didn't realize it was a singer there. What an amazing voice! That's just one of the best that I had heard. Sounded like Pavarotti. I thought it was a recording. Oh well, but still. You know how good it was if you watched it. And Elon Musk, watching him jump around the stage, I didn't realize that he was on the spectrum, right? And then some other people told me on my Facebook page that he had already talked about being on the spectrum, or, you know, the autism spectrum, you know, that sort of thing, which, of course, in his particular case is functioning just fine, but he's able to really take his brain and put it in a super hyper-focused mode that most of the rest of us just cannot do, which makes him very intelligent in his particular case. But still, overall, just great. It was a wonderful, wonderful Trump event. And that's about all there is to see. And if you watched it, you know that. You know that. Don't need to tell you. But if you didn't, then I'll just tell you. Hopefully you heard. 770-5633-770-KMED. Hey, next hour, I just want to let you know some stuff we'll be talking about. We had Mark, who ended up bringing by a big, big, big sample of Klamath River water from Happy Camp in the middle of the channel. This was done a couple of weeks ago, and it's been running like Bosco, like Chocolate Quick, whatever it is. It's just been an ugly, ugly river for a long time, and I know Klamath River Renewal Corporation has been putting out their happy propaganda, oh, the river is running free, and the magic fish will be returning. It will be years and years of restoration. Of course, that's the real grift. I guess that's how they got so many people to lay down for this. I don't know. For the religion of the free running river, the reverse watershed, the dams that actually cooled the river water and allowed cool river water to flow down the Klamath, which would normally never happen naturally because the Klamath water, water coming out of Klamath Lake is hot, just the way it goes, right? Reverse watershed. And the dams actually were a big help there over the years, but no longer. But what is in that stuff? What is in that chemical stew? We'll talk about that a little more than an hour from now. I think you'll find it interesting. And, we have to be fair about this. A lot of this is naturally occurring, but they're flushing all this sediment down the river. They were supposed to have dredged out the sediment, all the stuff behind the dams that had been there for decades, all of the organophosphates, et cetera, and they were supposed to get rid of all that stuff, but that was just too expensive, so instead we just blow it up and flush it down the river, and the magic fish will come back. I don't know, looking at the chemical makeup of what's in that water right now and the amount of dissolved solids, I don't think there were any magic fish living in this Klamath River at this point, and I don't know how many years it will take for the magic fish to return. Just saying. It's 19 minutes after 6, 770-5633. We can talk about that. Anything else on your mind, too? This is the Bill Meyer Show.
Since 1979, Dusty's Transmissions has been your go-to transmission experts, proudly serving our region for over 40 years. This family-owned, award-winning business has grown to become the largest specialized transmission and gear train shop from Portland to Sacramento. With 10 lifts and a custom remanufacturing facility, they're equipped to get you back on the road quickly. Dusty's Transmissions keeps inventory stocked, minimizing downtime and saving you money. Trust the experts at Dusty's, 250 North Front Street, Central Point.
Dusty's Transmission. Always find me hanging around there.
As the Montana roofing crews travel around Southern Oregon, they like to keep things interesting.
We've been doing so many roofs around the valley, there's not many areas where we don't see our past work.
Ooh, like that one.
Yep, the whole metal package. Roof, siding, flashing, gutters.
Tile job.
Oh yeah, that's a beauty. Luxury home on the hill with tile and copper accents.
Shake.
That traditional barn looks great with that fading shake roof. That one was tricky.
I'm up like 3-0.
Oh, wait, I didn't know this was a competition. Composite.
Jinx. Maybe we should just Rochambeau for that one.
Rochambeau? I'm driving. A tie goes to the driver.
Okay, well, I'll give you that one. Metal, you're kidding. Destroyed. 4-1.
Oh, this isn't fair. I got to keep my eyes on the road, and I can't look around and see what else is going on.
While the Fontana roofing crew has fun on the way, they're all business when they arrive at your job site. Visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
Lynn Barton here, Medicare Advisor at Sky Park Insurance. If you have Medicare Advantage, big changes are coming, so it's more important than ever to review your current coverage and compare plans. Annual enrollment is October 15th to December 7th. Let me help you make sense of it all. And if you're new to Medicare, I can explain how it works, your coverage options, and potential pitfalls. Call me at 541-499-0958 or find me at skyparkins.com.
At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
Hi, I'm Dwayne Barkley with American Rancher Garage, and I'm on KMEV.
22 minutes after 6. Friday, Senator Jeff Merkley came to town. I had mentioned he was going to be coming to look at the affordable housing deal, and this is how this went. KOBI covered it.
Jeff Merkley makes a stop in Medford to tour New Spirit Village, a new innovative and affordable home ownership development. NBC5's Lauren Preto met with the senator to talk about this great step in battling the state's housing crisis.
So this is the way to go to address the housing shortage in our state and to give families a stake in their communities through ownership.
After the Alameda fire, the Faldin Foundation, a nonprofit that has been operating in the Rogue Valley for the last 9 years, dedicated a significant portion of funds towards a housing project to help fire victim families. 4 years later, the six-acre project is in its early stages of completion with 5 houses finished. New Spirit Village in Medford uses high-density planning to maximize space and encourage community connections.
Okay, that one makes me laugh. High-density planning, that is meaning very crowded. High density means lots of people on little space. But high density planning, and they said it would cause, it will encourage community connections. Yeah, because you're all crowded together like rats. Okay. We're all rats in a cage. That it's kind of how they envision the elites, including Senator Merkley, I think, envision our future in the climate-friendly, equitable community sort of development deal. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's really what they think. But they try to sell being crowded as a community good. I just wanted to point that out because that's a little bit of propaganda coming your way.
Once the neighborhood is completed, the site will comprise of 87 houses with a playground and community garden area as well.
A community garden. Oh, a community garden. This sounds strangely like Diana Anderson's talk the other week about the future of food, in which we go back to the Sovietization, in which you're in your 15-minute climate-friendly, equitable community that you're not really going to be able to leave too much. You'll be forced to be growing your food. I'm sure they're selling this as just a voluntary thing at some point, but in the future, maybe it'll be a little more mandatory. And, you know, after all, you are a low-income person in this affordable housing, so you're probably on a lot of services. Maybe that'll be where the work, maybe that's how you'll be working, you know, in the future. Now, I'm speculating on this thing, but remember, you have to take whatever wonderful Democrat fired program that is coming to you, and you have to look at it through this through the lens of their whole sustainable development goal. Okay, I'm just saying. Okay,
this is like the opportunity to reestablish stability. You're in a great community, a big park across the way, a nearby school. This is a place where the roots will be sunk deep.
Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley came to Medford to check out this new housing addition.
Okay, there we go. So Senator Merkley came, and, you know, it's not that I don't want affordable housing here for Southern Oregon, but people, you know, you have affordable housing drones like Senator Merkley who continue to do things to try to fix interferences that they have already put into the housing system, and that is state land use planning. Now, remember with this... you know, this affordable housing development that Jeff Merkley went to on Friday, they're talking about how, oh, this is wonderful because you're going to be involved in ownership. In ownership. No, you don't own the land. In fact, Betty from Grants Pass wrote me this morning, said, Bill, so I saw that video about the new housing project you were talking about on Friday, and the only thing that comes to mind is expensive mobile home park, and they all look alike. And if you come home drunk, you would never find your place unless you had a neon sign with your name on it. And there will be lots of infighting. Can't be that close with the kids and drunks without issues. And so who is paying the taxes on the property, or is that built into the sale price? They said prices will be $240,000 plus, but I didn't hear the square footage. They look like my double car garage. What new jobs are going to come into town to pay the monthly payment? Rumor is it that they're calling it Matchbox Meadows. Okay, well, you could be right about that, Betty. I don't know about the rumors there, but they don't own the land. And so you're just owning the depreciating house on top of that. It's not the same. It is kind of like the a non-mobile, mobile home kind of model, really. And nice, you know, at least with the mobile home, you could technically tow it away. You're not going to be able to do it with this particular development. But once again, it's all about cramming people into the city and also making sure that you have small amounts of land when Oregon has tons of land. Oregon is only at the most 18% developed. We have so much space. We even have so much space around here. But no, everything is, you know, into the urban growth boundary, into the stack and pack, climate-friendly, equitable community. And this is, once again, an interference of government. Nobody has demanded stack and pack housing. State land use planning and the rules about development have given us that, along with the financialization of the United States economy from the Federal Reserve, which we also cannot forget about here. So I just want to make sure that you run this through your brain when you hear all this is a wonderful, affordable housing community. And Betty asks a very good question. Who's going to pay the property taxes? Guess what, Betty? We are. The rest of the people who aren't in affordable housing get to pay the property taxes for the affordable housing. Because remember, if you heard in the beginning of that little conversation of that story from NBC5, it's a nonprofit group. So it's a nonprofit that owns the land trust. It's nonprofit, meaning doesn't pay taxes. Now, is that the sustainable model here in which everybody's living in stack and pack housing, not paying property taxes, and then a few of the elite that still own their house, ostensibly own their house, will end up having to pay the taxes to make up the difference? Every time you see an organization that's talking about their nonprofit status around here, just remember, they're not paying taxes on all of their land, too, even though you have to for your for-profit business or for your regular home. Just remember that. How sustainable is that? 629-770-5633. So anyway, I know it's not Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, but I just want you to think clearly as they make such a big noise about, oh, this is the wonderful affordable housing model. If you really want to make housing affordable, you build more of it and you allow it to be built where you want it, not where the state wishes to permit it. Good morning. This is the Bill Myers Show. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Vicki from the Applegate.
Hello, Vicki. How are you?
Hi. I just wanted to know if you heard anything about this. A friend of mine, and she goes online all the time, but she had heard that there was a whistleblower dock worker that supposedly told someone that some of those shipping containers contained people. And I was just wondering if you'd heard anything about that.
Well, I don't know if the ones that are there right now had people in them. I couldn't say one way or the other. But let's be clear about one of the reasons they really don't want automation brought in there. You know, that was one of the big bones of contention about automation, you know, monitoring the ports. Because I would venture a guess that there are certain people that work within the dock world that are very big in the smuggling and the human trafficking, which would also go through in those shipping containers. And can you imagine if artificial intelligence is monitoring and controlling everything around those ports? Do you think that business may have a little more difficulty being done?
Well, yeah, because first of all, they'd get caught smuggling people.
Yeah, that might be part of it. But yeah, so I've not heard anything specific about this particular dock worker's strike, but it's pretty well known that, yeah, human trafficking, people do come in through some of those shipping containers. Indeed.
Yeah, he said, the person said, we're so, like, for months we've been hearing people banging on the walls, asking, you know, begging to get, have someone let them out. And I just, that blows my mind that they would actually, like, put people in one of those and expect them to be, you know, alive when they finally get.
Well, I guess the idea is that you expect them to be alive and opened up there on the other end. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I have not heard anything specific about that particular claim. But it would not surprise me. You would have to think with the millions upon millions of shipping containers that come in, some of them are definitely, would obviously have to be human trafficking, too. I mean, well, come on. I was just watching, a spy movie over the weekend. Just some spy movie. Hollywood knows all about it. And one of the ways they got some of the people out is that they shoved them into a shipping container and shipped them out of the country. You know, no passport required. That kind of thing.
Right. And, I was shocked, but not shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you read stuff on the internet all the time and you take it with a grain of salt. I don't read any of it because I can't handle that much salt.
gotta go with low sodium, right? On the news consumption.
I don't want to poison myself over trying to.
Yeah. But I would figure that yes, there is some human trafficking. At what level, I couldn't say. Maybe I'll invite the Federation for American Immigration Reform folks on because they usually track a lot of that kind of stuff. I'll get back to you on it. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. You have a great day.
All right. You too. 6:32 at KMED. Catch up on the rest of the news here in just a moment. Kenneth Raposo will then join me. We're going to be talking about, I don't know if it's necessarily involving human trafficking, but which American companies are most exposed to being dependent on China, because it appears that, you know, the worm has turned when it comes to free and open trade with China, and which companies have the most to worry about. We'll talk about that with Kenneth coming up.
Connection, opportunity, possibility. It's what we all want. Spectrum has built a world where anything is possible, with products and services designed to work better together for a seamless connectivity experience. A connection to family and friends, a connection to education, and a connection to new opportunities. So there's no limit to how big we can dream. That's Life Unlimited. That's Spectrum.
Saving big, I can dig on just the things I need.
Oregon E-Deals has saved the Rogue Valley truckloads of money over the years on things you buy and use often. All Beauty Mark salon certificates are half off. Also, save big on Diner 62, Malello's Coffee, and Freddy's Diner. This and much more available exclusively at OregonEDeals.com.
I'm hooked on OregonEDeals.com. I'm saving big.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. The Medford City Council is using federal pandemic aid for homelessness, mental health, and addiction issues. The money will go to the Rogue Retreat to expand transitional housing for people leaving residential addiction treatment, along with the Maslow Project, which provides supplies for homeless students. The Medford Police Department will use the money for a part-time community service officer. The rest will go towards the Medford Municipal Court and their outreach court. Pacific Power is sending support personnel and equipment to areas hard hit by Hurricane Helene. Pacific Power says Oregon crews will be going from Bend, Medford, Grants Pass, and Roseburg. The 22 people from the Pacific Northwest are equipped with 20 trucks. The value of Oregon's agricultural products soared 35% in 5 years, ending in 2020, according to newly released federal data. Oregon produced nearly $6.8 billion of nursery plants, beef hay, berries, potatoes, beans, milk, eggs, and Christmas trees, among other products, in 2022. Bill London, KMED.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason. It was a year ago today, the deadly Hamas terror attack on Israel. The day, sometimes referred to as Israel's 9/11, ignited the war in Gaza. And today, Hamas rocket fire from Gaza activated air raid sirens all across Tel Aviv. A strengthening Hurricane Milton could make landfall in the Tampa Bay area at midweek, according to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Currently, Milton, a Category 3 hurricane. The Supreme Court's fall term is opening today. Arguments due this week over an Oklahoma death penalty case, as well as federal regulation of so-called ghost guns. Donald Trump making it quite clear about how important Wisconsin is in the presidential race. The former president was there yesterday for the fourth time in just 8 days. On Wall Street, stocks opening lower this morning. This is SRN News.
An intelligent solution saves you money. This is Randall at Advanced Air. It takes an expert to navigate the current HVAC rebates. Call Advanced Air to save big on equipment replacement. Advanced Air is currently offering an additional rebate on qualifying systems, up to $1,000 on Bryant mini split and crossover heat pumps. Some exclusions apply. Advanced Air and Bryant do whatever it takes to deliver intelligent heating and cooling solutions. Visit myadvancedair.com for details.
Your intelligent heating and cooling solution. Visit myadvancedair.com.
I'm Rick Dyer, Jackson County Commissioner. I've known Randy Sparacino for over 10 years, and I've watched Randy as a leader, as the chief of police for Medford and as Medford mayor, and worked with him on several issues that I know are important to the residents of Jackson County, and I trust his leadership. I'm Rick Dyer, and I support Randy Sparacino for Jackson County Commissioner.
Vote Randy Sparacino for Jackson County Commissioner. Paid for by Sparacino for Oregon, ID 20676.
The Bill Myers Show is on. News Talk 106.3 KMED.
Ken Raposa joins me. He's a 20-year veteran reporter, ex-Wall Street Journal in Sao Paulo, Brazil, 11 years covering and traveling to Brazil, Russia, India, China for Forbes. Currently a Newsweek columnist where he often writes explainers for international trade matters such as China and the Donald Trump tariffs. Also an analyst on the think tank side of the Coalition for a Prosperous America, a membership organization representing domestic producers of various products, be it beef, boat, steel, or solar. How you doing this morning, Ken? Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. Doing good.
Boy, you know, that introduction, that would be hard to put on a business card, but it must have pretty, hey, this is what I do. All right. Okay. Ken, wanted to talk with you. First of all, tell us a little bit about prosperousamerica.org, which is your website there, since you're kind of helping them out right
now. The Coalition for Prosperous America is about a 12-year-old organization. It's a member organization, and members are interested in keeping manufacturing or any kind of production in the United States, mm-hmm. as opposed to outsourcing. That's the simplest way to describe what we do.
Okay, domestic. So does that mean you're in favor of the Trump tariffs as he has been discussing them on the campaign trail? It's been a lot of conversation over the last few weeks about that.
Yeah. Yes, we are in favor. I mean, we have probably some members who aren't as in favor, but for the most part, it would lean heavily in favor of tariffs. We were in favor of the Section 301 tariffs against China in 2018, you know, and we believe that if you want to have industry in the United States, and of course, one of the best ways to describe the industry in the United States that Capitol Hill seems to worry about is the defense industry, making sure you have enough capacity to make steel or weaponry, right? That's what they'll always talk about on Capitol Hill. But beyond that, making sure that you have a blue-collar middle class, as Kamala Harris talks about, base, you know, that's not just working for Google, working for software companies, or working, you know, in the professional services like McKinsey or Goldman Sachs. That's where very few people work in those high pay fields. And the middle class in this country has been built up by working in or around industry, right? So we want to keep that at least status quo rather than declining. And it will decline if you're just going to outsource manufacturing to the cheapest part of the planet where labor is cheap, which is pretty much everywhere else outside of the United States.
Now, I have read that there is I've read from other analysts that say that we shouldn't even try to get back manufacturing because we would still be too costly. It would be very inflationary. And the fact that that's just not what Americans do any longer, and we're more into the Google and those other kind of jobs that you were talking about. And I'm thinking to myself, I think about those folks that live around Asheville, North Carolina. They probably don't strike me as Google people, but I could be wrong, you know, about that. Just saying.
Well, the guys who say that are the ones who you know, and I agree with them. And you know, I agree with what they're saying. You know, the industry of the United States and the industry of the future is Intel. It is Google, which mm-hmm. sells its IP right abroad and makes money that way. Apple, okay. When they're not making iPhones in the United States, they do make MacBooks, I believe, in Texas. They do make some MacBooks in Texas, actually. And people still buy them, despite them being $2,000 or $3,000. People still buy them. But and they collect all their IP money every time somebody downloads something from the App Store. Fine, that's fine. But again, if you're going to have a blue-collar, middle-class base in this country, you cannot rely on one sector of the economy, which is the digital economy, which I don't know what that accounts for overall in the United States. Certainly manufacturing is only maybe 9 to 12%, but you don't want it to go down to 5 or 2, right?
Okay, yeah, I get it. It kind of reminds me of you remember the conversation a few years ago as more factories would close, and remember when they were saying, well, you have to go to school and learn how to code, right? Remember that?
How much
of that was going? You need to go back to school, timber worker, and learn how to code, which is not necessarily fitting your psychographic of what your idea of a good career is. And there was the other part about it. Now look at it. They're talking about people who are coders are going to be thrown out of work because AI is going to take over most of that, huh? So there we go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I use ChatGPT-4 almost every day, perplexity.ai. I use it all the time. And I mean, I'm sure these programs can do simple coding or even simple things like, you know, correction. Right? We're doing an update to Microsoft Word. I mean, that used to be people that did those things, right, that fixed bugs. Now it's just going to be an algorithm that does it. That's probably thousands of jobs lost on that end. But as far as tariffs go, again, right, you don't – again, like you were saying, right, okay, Americans don't want to manufacture. Okay, well, we're probably not going to manufacture, you know, all the stuff that you see at Joann Fabrics or all the stuff you see in a home goods store like a Mr. Coffee Pot. We might not. We might not be manufacturing those. Okay, understandable. We might not be pots and pans. Might not be manufacturing those. Even though I do have a nice Lancaster cast iron skillet that I got for over $100 from the Amish in Pennsylvania, as opposed to a Chinese one I bought for half the price, which is just as good. To be honest with you, it's just as good. Yeah, all cast iron.
Your Amish cast iron pan is morally superior, though. Okay, there you
go. It is a little bigger and it is morally superior. But again, if you want to have a steel industry, if you want to have an auto industry, let's look at that. Like auto industry in the United States, coffee pot makers, there's not a lot of them in the United States. Might only be 100 employees. But let's look at the auto industry, for example. Mm-hmm. If you had no tariffs on pickup trucks in the United States, which we have, that's why all of our sedans come from Mexico, right? All the Japanese guys that are making it in the United States, but for the most part, all you see in the United States is SUVs and pickup trucks. We have tariffs on pickup trucks. I'm not even sure if Mexico makes pickup trucks in the United States. They might. That might be changing over the last few years, which is worrisome for the U.S. auto worker. But because we have net global tariffs on pickup trucks, this is why we have a pickup truck industry in the United States. This is why you see pickup trucks everywhere, and not just by people who are hauling lumber and have a boat hitch to their F-150. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have that just to go to Lowe's. You know, they're not construction crew guys, and so. One of the reasons why we have it is because that part of the auto industry has been protected by tariffs. Now,
I would also add, though, that our pickup trucks are very expensive. And that may be a connection there with the tariffs, to be fair.
I would say no, because they're very expensive because they're just a bigger car, right? They're a bigger car. I mean, a Mercedes-Benz is very expensive, right? And they're imported too. We import those in the United States at 2.5% tariff, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just the Mercedes-Benz is a lot different than a Chevy Malibu. You know, just what's inside of it and how it runs, right? It's a bigger machine. So they are expensive. That is out of my market to have a brand new pickup truck, and they are expensive.
Well, I was just wondering, what role – now, that tariff you're talking about, that's the chicken tax, isn't that right? Isn't that the one they call the chicken tax?
Exactly. That is called the chicken tax. That is called the chicken tax. And the reason I mentioned the auto industry is because it's an industry that has hundreds of thousands of workers. And if you are going to just make all those cars in Mexico – and believe me, you can. Mexico – Nuevo León is a state in Mexico. It's only 2 hours from Laredo, Texas, which is now the biggest land border in the United States. That's where a lot of the goods come in now. Right through that part of Texas, mm-hmm. as opposed to ports in Los Angeles and New Jersey. A lot of it's coming right on through there. So what's stopping anyone just from making all vehicles in Mexico? I mean, you certainly could do that. There's really no need to make it in the United States. I don't know if the price of a car will suddenly be a brand new car. You could suddenly buy it for $18,000 because thanks to Mexican labor. I highly doubt it, but who knows? Maybe that's the case. We haven't seen that with the Ford Mach-E EV. That costs $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. I'm not sure off the top of my head. That's made in Mexico, so I'm not sure we're saving a lot of money there. It's about the price of a brand-new Tesla, which is made in California.
Ken Raposo, I kind of get where you're coming from, though. When President Trump says that that China will pay the tariff that he wants to lay on Chinese goods, mm-hmm. is that true? Because the way I looked at it, and And maybe I'm not a very complex thinker when it comes to these such matters, but I thought that any tax that you put on that is ultimately paid by whoever buys the good, and that would be the American if you're buying something from China. But where am I missing something on this?
Okay, right. So I know this is tricky. I'm going to try to say it in the simplest way.
Okay.
So China is paying for it theoretically, only theoretically, in the sense that they're losing mainland China business and having to outsource their manufacturing to Southeast Asia or Mexico. They're also paying for it in the sense that they have to coordinate with, you and I, who are the importers, and saying, hey, look, I'm going to pay 25% more now. I got hit with a 25% tariff on this widget I import from you guys for the last 10 years. What can you do for me?
Uh-huh.
Right? The Chinese guy isn't saying, that's too bad. He's not saying that. That's too bad. Too bad for you, because then you and I are going to say, well, good, I'm going to go to the Vietnamese guy. I'm going to go to the Mexican, or I'm going to make more of it in the United States, or wherever.
So you end up squeezing the Chinese exporter? Is that what you're doing with this?
Yeah, the Chinese exporter says, okay, we're going to do something else. I'm going to lower the price on here, or we take a lower margin. Because again, you and I, we're importing the good, but we're selling that good to Walmart. We can't all of a sudden tell Walmart, oh, all that patio furniture that we were selling you, that we have in line to sell you for $1,000, now it's $1,500. Mm-hmm. You think Walmart's going to pay Right, Amy?
Or Costco or anything else. Yeah, they're going to say,
they're not going to do it. Exactly.
Heck with
they're
it.
Not gonna do it. So there's all sorts of negotiation along the way. So it's not like it's not cut and dry. Like most people think of, oh, no, I'm importing a pair of sneakers for $100. Now it's a 25% tariff. Oh, my sneakers are going to cost $125 now? Let's pretend that was the case. It's not, but let's pretend that was the case. That would, of course, be a one-time increase, right? That's not like it goes up 20% every year, right? That would be the one-time increase in the price of your sneakers imported from China if a 20% tariff on those sneakers affect the price of that good to us, to me, the consumer, at the end, not to you,
okay.
The manufacturer.
Okay, what about then? Does China end up with its central bank ending up subsidizing that with their own currency? Is that how they end up doing that too? How they fight the tariff? Do you know?
Well, one way they fight it, of course, is the Chinese yuan can get weaker, but I don't think that's something that they always do on purpose. You know what I mean? Because it is a little bit moderately market driven, right? They have a band range in which the Chinese currency can weaken or strengthen against the dollar, and I think actually the yuan has gained in the last few months against the dollar. But what they can do, of course, if it's again going back to what we said before, coffee makers probably not an important industry, cars. So now China is being told that we're going to put a tariff on cars coming in from China into the United States. China obviously wants an auto industry. They obviously want one, just like Korea has an auto industry, and just like Japan. China wants one too. And so what happens? So the Chinese government, they'll do two things. One, they'll try to make it so that their locals will buy more cars made by Chinese brands, which will squeeze out the Buick.
So they'll put a tariff on Buick, right? On Buick.
Oh, they'll put a tariff. It could be a retaliatory tariff. What they'll do is they'll help the. Let's put it this way: it's simple. They'll help the domestic producer gain market share locally at the detriment of the Western brands, or they'll help that company cover the tariff costs that they can't cover by themselves by shrinking their margin.
Got it. All right, very good. So, Ken, let me I want to talk about, since we're talking about China right now, this kind of dovetails quite nicely into your prosperousamerica.org piece that you put up the other day about the 10 United States companies that are overexposed to China. And you're telling me that these are the companies that are most in danger of wherever trade's going to be going over the next few years, right? Because it looks like we're starting to deglobalize a bit. Would that be fair to say right now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We are well. Globalization for the last 15 years has meant make everything in China. That's what globalization
exactly
for the Western world.
Exactly. That's what it's meant here.
So now what's happening is a sort of de-risking from China. So it doesn't mean that things are not made abroad. Things are suddenly being made in Europe. That's for sure not happening. Or the things are suddenly being made in the United States. It means that there less of them are being made only in China. They're being made in Vietnam, of course, by Chinese multinationals that are there. But they're being made there. They're being made in Malaysia. It's being made in Mexico, increasingly so. So there is a sense of changing the model of just being China is the go-to indispensable manufacturing hub. And that's a problem for China. Believe me, that is a big problem for China because China invested to be that nation for the West. And now the West is saying that you're not going to be that anymore. It's a big problem for China, but that's another subject. So about those 10 companies. So this business intelligence and political risk firm in New York called Strategy Risks that we partner with at the Coalition for Prosperous America did a index of the top 250 American companies that are most exposed to China. That means much of their sales come from China. Much of their inputs come from China, things that they import to make their cars or their phones, right, come from there. Mm-hmm. That they are also exposed to Chinese state-owned enterprises. And, of course, this idea behind this index was if you're an investor or if you're partnering with this company, you need to know about their Chinese exposure because the government is constantly going after China these days. Your relationship with this company could be at risk and your cost could totally balloon.
Yeah, this could be a real problem for these particular companies because the winds are changing, right? You know, they're blowing in a different way right now. What are some of the these biggest names that are really in trouble because of China or could be in
trouble?
All
right, so here are the biggest names. Here they are. So I'll give you the number one is Ford.
Ford
is the best example. So Ford Motor Company, best example. Their automotive supply chain is heavily tied to China. Their relationship with joint venture firms. They have joint ventures with Chinese state-owned automobile companies. And what's happened with Ford is they have actually told their Chinese auto supply guys, the guys who make brake pads and whatever, I used to do it for them in China. They told them, we can't deal with the tariffs or the political risk anymore. Please come to Mexico. Please come to Mexico.
Because we have a different... What? Because we don't have tariffs with Mexico at this point?
We don't have tariffs. It's duty-free. You know, if you're going to manufacture everything in Mexico, it's going to be part of the original content of the North American Free Trade Agreement, USMCA. So it's going to be part of the of one of our vehicles that can come in duty-free. And by the way, if an American car was made in Mexico, as a sidebar to you, what I was just saying, if an American car was made in Mexico, most of the parts have to be made in Mexico, United States, and Canada in order to come in duty free.
Okay.
If the parts are not made there, like let's say an engine is imported from China, right, then it doesn't qualify for duty free. But the tariff is 2.5%. I mean, that's not gonna persuade anybody not to do that. Right. It's just not. But anyway, Ford invited a lot of their Chinese suppliers to Mexico to avoid that risk. Apple is number three on this list, a household name. Everyone knows about Apple.
Boy, that is a big one. What kind of a duty are they facing or tariff would they be facing?
Well, they got the 25%, I believe, on laptops.
Laptops. Okay.
Yeah, laptops. Yeah, any kind of I'm not sure about the phones. I'm not sure about the iPhones, actually, because I think some of these main tariffs that Trump imposed on China, he tried to avoid a lot of the big consumer items, and I think iPhones were not part of that. I don't think any kind of phone is tariffed. But laptops are definitely tariffed. So they would face that. But Apple is reading the tea leaves as well, as you said earlier. And so they're trying to, well, at least they have said they want to move a lot of their manufacturing into India, you know.
Ah, now I noticed that Carrier, I just went and found your article and saw that Carrier is number two on the list. Now, you know, we already have an issue in which the federal government is making HVAC incredibly expensive. I think about every 90 days they change the type of refrigerant we're supposed to be using, you know, to be more efficient, right? You know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And so the old stuff goes away. But Carrier, it's all made in China, huh?
Or Mexico. And let's not forget, when Trump was elected, Carrier said, hey, we're closing a facility, I forget where it was, somewhere in the Midwest, and we're going to move it to Mexico.
Yeah.
And Trump complained, said, please don't do that. You know, we're going to give you guys a huge tax cut. Just hold your horses. Everything's going to be great. We're going to put tariffs on your competition in China. Everything's going to be fine. And they stayed put for a while. But I think within maybe a year, they decided they were going to leave. And why? They left to Mexico, that particular facility, whatever item it was that they were making, not all of their product line, but some of it was moved to Mexico. Why? Why did they do that? It's exactly what you just said. It's not just like they got to pay me and you $30 an hour to make this product. You know, it's not that.
Yeah.
And they're going to pay $8 to the Mexican. It's all the regulations you just mentioned.
And that's what I was getting at. Why don't we get to the point where we lighten up on the American employer and worker so that you don't have to pay so much for people? And that you don't financialize the economy to the same extent so that we make something other than debt paper.
That is the million-dollar question. That is the million-dollar question. You know, you said financialization of the economy, of course, right? I mean, our biggest export is our securities market. It's American stocks and bonds.
We used to make stuff. Now we make debt. It's like but I guess, you know, as long as you have a big military, it's able to kind of enforce use of the dollar at gunpoint. I guess that works for a while. Ken.
Well, yes. But again, these military guys, the DOD, at least they say at least that they're worried. And increasingly so, and again, Trump highlighted all this stuff, and of course, Biden continued with it, that a lot of the products that they need, whether it's a global positioning system for an F-15 or metal, specific type of metal to build, you know, a submarine, it comes from China.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are in a situation where they're saying, we have to either, you know, find partners outside of China that can make this stuff, you know. Maybe it's Australia, maybe it's Chile, maybe it's Germany, but or ourselves, God forbid, or we're just going to be beholden to China. And on that list, of course, is Raytheon. I think they're number eight on the list.
Raytheon, big defense contractor, right? They're exposed.
Big defense contractor, yeah, very exposed to China. They're the only defense contractor that is heavily exposed to China. And a year ago, their CEO, Gregory Hayes, who's no longer their CEO, he just left, I think, last year, well, shortly after he made this comment, said that there is no way we could decouple from China. We get thousands of parts that we are totally reliant on China to produce.
Gee, nothing like having your defense industry dependent on your, well, most likely next world war enemy. Just saying. Just thinking.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, again, and that goes back to what we were saying before. No one wants to manufacture. No one wants to make things. Okay. It's not like it was in the 1950s, you know what I mean, where there's like 13-year-olds and like flip-flops, you know, breaking rocks and, you know, mixing cement, you know what I mean? And yeah. Everybody's smoking and you leave out oil and soot.
Yeah.
Now there's
another one on that list that intrigued me, Tesla. So the Tesla industry, mm-hmm. Tesla's what, number four on this list. Is this one of the reasons, just saying that could be another reason why Elon Musk is kind of sliding over to Trump world? Could there be, a real business connection with that going on?
I would argue, and I can't get into Elon Musk's head, I would say that the reason why he's sliding over to the Trump world is because if Kamala wins, he probably assumes that X will be killed somehow.
Ah, okay.
That he'll be forced to sell it because they're the censorship guys, right? But as far as his relationship with China, yes, most of the cars that he manufactures in China is for the Chinese and the Asian market. So he's not making cars there for sale here. I honestly think that the biggest risk to in the Tesla relationship, and Tesla is very on that list because of its sale. I think it's the number one foreign EV that is sold in China. It's the number one. Okay. So it beats all the German guys. And of course, China's number one, but Tesla, I think, is the number two EV sold in China. Is that Tesla is investing billions of dollars hundreds of millions of dollars in an assembly line just south of the border again in Nuevo León State in Mexico to make cars. So this is a place where and they invited a lot of the Chinese automotive suppliers. They invited all of them that they deal with in China. They invited them to come to Mexico to help them make Teslas. And my thinking is that those Teslas are going to be made in Mexico and eventually just come into the United States. Maybe the Cybertruck will be made there. I don't know. We're seeing that Mexico is just as much of a problem when it comes to the automotive supply chain, and that's that most of those cars come in duty-free, and if they don't, they're only tariffed at 2.5%.
I got to tell you, it is a really interesting article. I'm going to link to this so people can read this up, but how all these American companies are tightly tied in there. By the way, before we take off here, Ken, is that Walt Disney tie, I have... You know, is there any wonder why the ABC news team that did the debate had no mention of China when they had Walt Disney? They're owned by Walt Disney, right?
Right, they didn't. I am surprised. That's true. Great point. It's amazing that you say that. But everything on the media now, it's all about the culture war and how Trump is bad. So that's all they talk about, right? But I'm surprised. You would think, right? China's supposed to be our biggest strategic rival, right?
Right.
It's the biggest problem we have is China. When you leave the reports from the Director of National Intelligence, you know, those they always say the same thing. China's been China for the last 3 years. Walt Disney's big exposure is pretty even across the board, right? So it's the sales, but it's their relationship with state-owned enterprises because they have Shanghai Disney and Hong Kong Disney. I believe the partner in Shanghai Disney is the state, okay? So it's not. I don't think it's a private entity. Hong Kong might be, but the one in Shanghai, I'm pretty sure not. So they're pretty beholden to the Chinese government if they want Shanghai Disneyland to stay in business. And then, of course, they have some issues with their supply chains. Of course, I'm sure they make a lot of clothes in China, and a lot of those clothes are made probably from cotton that the United States has bans on. So, you know, that's the reason why Disney's on that list.
Yeah, I got to tell you, like I said, it's really interesting reading here. Ken Raposa, I know you have other people to talk to, and I'm sorry I kept you longer than I thought, but I've been enjoying, you know, picking your brain on this kind of stuff. Ken Raposa, industry analyst from Coalition for a Prosperous America and a former staff foreign correspondent for the Wall Street Journal and a senior contributor to Forbes covering China since 2011. We will have you back, Ken. Thanks so much for the talk. I really appreciate the knowledge here. Okay. You take care.
Thanks a lot.
All right. It's a couple minutes after 7 o'clock. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.